The views and opinions expressed by the host and tonight's guest are not necessarily those of this radio network, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Listener discretion is advised. Now lock your doors, open your minds, and prepare yourself to go
beyond the edge.
It's Sunday night. Time for the hottest alternative talk radio on the planet. Welcome to Beyond the Edge Radio. 2 hours of fascinating guests, mind-blowing topics, and stimulating conversation. All here on your home for the best alternative talk radio. This is Beyond the Edge Radio. Nervous? Scared? Don't be afraid. The wait will be over soon. Sit down, strap in, and hold on tight. You're about to be taken beyond the edge.
And good evening and welcome to another edition of Beyond the Edge Radio. We are live here on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and KPGZLP 102.7 FM, The Hog. My name is Eric Altman, your host and producer of tonight's program, and welcome everybody to Beyond the Edge Radio. It is Sunday night, July 29th. It is 8:01 here on the East Coast, and we want to welcome everybody here to tonight's program. Before we get started and underway, let's introduce tonight's co-host to the show. You know him from Phantoms and Monsters and Astral Perceptions, the one and only Lon Strickler. Good evening, Lon. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Doing very well. Looking forward to a great show.
I am as well, and we've got a returning guest to the program tonight. He is no stranger to BTE Radio. He's been on probably about 7, 8, maybe 9 times.
Maybe, if not more.
If not more. He's been one of our more popular returning guests, and he's back tonight to talk about strange and unusual creature sightings and UFO reports from the Pennsylvania area. He is longtime paranormal UFO and strange anomaly researcher Stan Gordon. He'll be returning to the show tonight. And he'll be joining us in about 15 minutes from now as we start a brand new format here at BTE Radio. And before I explain that, I want to let everybody know that our other co-hostess, Amy Perry, is not joining us tonight on the program. She has the night off, so it will be just Lon and I this evening steering the ship. But as I said, we do have a new format in place. We're going to be trying it tonight and see how well it works, being that we're now part of 102.7 FM The Hog. They've asked us to switch over to their format, so we're going to be taking breaks every 20 minutes and rather than the bottom of the hour at 8:30 and then bottom of the hour at 9:30. So every 20 minutes we'll be taking a very quick minute to two-minute break, and that'll allow us time to get Stan on at 8:20, and then we'll be taking a break at 8:40, the top of the hour at 9 o'clock, 9:20 and 9:40, and then again to end the show at 9:55. So it's going to be an interesting change of format and see how it goes, and we'll play it by ear.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So a little shortened banter between Lon and I tonight, and that, you know, that's how things go.
So that's the way it goes, though.
That's right. Next week on the show, we've got another great guest lined up for you as we kick off July, and the summer months are flying by very, very quickly. July the 6th, we have the ghost cop, Stacy Jones, joining us. She is, in fact, a police officer with a long-time history of being a police officer, long-time career as a police officer, and she does paranormal investigations. A good friend of mine, she is from the Florida area, and she'll be joining us to talk about some of the cases that she's investigated. Originally from New York, and she's worked with such other paranormal investigators like John Zaffis. She's worked with Dave Schrader, a lot of more famous paranormal investigators over the years, and she's done some great work. And she'll be joining us next week on the show to talk about her investigations and maybe even play some EVPs for us as well.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah, she does a really great interview. She doesn't do many of them, but she does a great interview, and she is a pistol, no pun intended.
Oh, okay.
So it'll be fun to have her on. Other than that, there's really not much going on this end. We're going to be doing some filming this coming weekend, July 5th, 6th, and 7th. I will, anyways. We have a film crew coming to the BTE studios on July the 6th. They'll be filming here while we do BTE Radio Live. And they'll be filming me as I talk about, or try to talk about, Thunderbirds. So that should be fun. Yeah.
Yeah, not quite Bigfoot, but, you know.
No, but it's another type of cryptid, and one that I'm a little familiar with. It's not my forte, but, you know, we'll wing it and see how it goes.
Sure. Yeah, you know, you live in an area where there have been those sightings, so, yeah, you'll be all right.
Yeah, it should be fine. And of course, Stan is going to be the featured researcher for this documentary that they are going to be filming for. It's a production company called CMJ. They're out of Montreal, Quebec, Canada. And they're going to be filming for a TV show. I can't pronounce it because it's in French, and I'm not going to even try. But it roughly translates in English to Boogeymen. And they've run one season already with like 13 or 14 episodes, and this is season two. And they're doing the episode here in southwestern Pennsylvania about Thunderbirds. And they're going to talk with me about some of the cases, and Stan, and our own Amy Perry may even make an appearance in the show, as well as some other folks that you may recognize that do research around this area. So we'll see what happens next weekend.
Well, that'll all be fun. I mean, you know, it's something different. So hopefully we'll be able to see the final product.
Hopefully. And hopefully it'll air somewhere around here.
Mm-hmm.
We'll keep you posted on that. But I understand that you've been quite busy this week, Lon. You've had some interesting cases passed along to you, especially a BEK case.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've been working with, as many of you know, I've been working with J.C. Johnson on his investigations and reporting them on the blog. And he and a colleague, Jack Carey, had a BEK or black-eyed kid incident. Now, the incident was basically that of a maybe 18, 20-year-old female. But it was very harrowing, and, you know, we don't have a whole lot of time to go into it, but I, you know, if it's on the blog. It happened in New Mexico, so it's titled Cryptid Four Corner BEK Encounter. And as well, I had a in a report of a BEK encounter in Cowan's Gap State Park in Pennsylvania. It's in Fulton County. And it's an area I'm fairly familiar with. And this happened this past winter, but the witness and her husband reported it to me earlier in the week. I wanted to do a little checking up on it before I actually put it on the blog. So we're working on that now. And the one thing I can say, the witness was pretty shook up. It was a pretty harrowing from what I understand. Nothing really happened other than, like in this, actually with this case with JC, they had a physical reaction to these black-eyed kids looking at them, scowling at them, or whatever, and it wasn't pretty. So, and besides that, of course, I'm involved with two entity infestation cases right now as well. So I've been busy.
It sounds like you've been keeping yourself pretty busy.
Oh yeah.
Me, I've been trying to stay out of the limelight and off Facebook, and just trying to keep a low profile. And then, you know, I get myself in trouble if I go out in public too much. I do. I get myself in too much trouble.
Join the club.
Yeah.
I know how that is, too. It's, you know, you start doing this kind of stuff and, you know.
Adoring fans.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you know, you do feel people's wrath sometime.
Oh, and I felt it.
For various reasons. And, yes. So it's part of the show, so, you know, it's part of the thing you got to put up with when you go out there and try to report these things. So, you know, I'm starting to learn to live with it.
Yeah, that's all you can do is just live with it, and that's all you, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's all you really can do. It's just that, you know, it's an inconvenience, so, you know, we're not the only ones that go through it. And, it's just one of the things we're going to put up with, and, you know, I just look at it as something that's part of what we do.
That's about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it. As for tonight's guest on this show, as I mentioned, Stan Gordon is returning to the program. And I'm excited to have Stan back because we've got a lot to talk with Stan about. Stan and I have been investigating some cases this past spring and early, or late winter, I should say, early part of 2014. And he's got some interesting things to share with us. He's got, of course, the Kecksburg Festival coming up at the end of July. He's going to talk with us about that. He's going to share with us some cases he's been working on, some new leads, and a whole bunch of really cool stuff that he probably hasn't talked about before. Plus, I'm sure he'll talk about stuff that he already has covered with us before as well.
Uh-huh.
To go to his website, it's stangordon.info, stangordon.info. You can check that out. And he's got a really cool list of sighting reports, upcoming events. You can order his books online. He's got two of them there, his Kecksburg DVDs available online. You can go check that out and order them. I've read his books several times. They're great reads, and I highly recommend them.
Oh, yeah. I'm in the same boat with you. I think I've read Stan's book at least twice, both of them. And he has a lot of different things in there. And, well, and you can go into his website, and he's got his sighting reports listed there. And, of course, you know, the most recent one you and he were working on, so... yeah, I'm looking forward to y'all talking about that tonight.
Yeah. Some sad news to report from the Bigfoot research world. This gentleman passed away just recently, and I just found out about it. He wasn't a very well-known researcher, but he was an author. He wrote a book called Bigfoot on the East Coast. His name was Rick Barry.
Mm-hmm.
And he put the book out in 1993, and it was a chronological look at Bigfoot sightings in each state on the eastern seaboard. And I had the chance to meet Rick back in 1993. He was at one of Stan Gordon's Westmoreland Mall UFO Bigfoot display that he had going on, and he was selling his books there. That's where I met Rick at and had him sign uh-huh. a book for me. And if you have not picked up a copy of that book and had a chance to peruse it or even look through it, it's probably one of the most comprehensive looks at Bigfoot sightings in the eastern United States. As far as broken down by state and chronological order, it's very, very well detailed. It doesn't go into too much detail as far as the report goes because there's so much in there, but it does give a summary of each sighting and the date and the location, and it's a very good read. If you're interested in maybe putting together a database of where sightings have taken place, and maybe putting up a map on your wall and little push pins to see, you know, where the sightings have taken place. It's a great read. It's out of print, unfortunately, and you're only going to find it if you go on eBay or Amazon or some of the used bookstores online and do a search that way, or if you keep your eyes open around some of the different websites online that allow you to do a constant search, that they, you know, always look for those books, because it is a very, very rare book. I believe he only had maybe 200 or 300 books printed when he first printed it. So if you can get your hands on that book, it is a very rare item. I would suggest hanging on to it and keeping it. It's called Bigfoot on the East Coast by Rick Barry. And if you haven't checked it out, it's definitely worth a look.
Actually, it's in my library. It's one of the earlier books that I've read. It has a lot of sightings in there. And it's a lot of good reference material. But, yeah, I that's one of the earlier books I've read.
Yeah, I have a copy of it in my library as well. And it's actually the second copy I was able to get my hands on. The first copy I donated to an auction at a Bigfoot conference a few years back before I knew it was so rare. And I was fortunately able to get another copy after like 2-year search for it. I found it, I believe, in England. Of all places.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I was able to get a copy of it. But, yeah, I definitely will not part with this book now. But it's very unfortunate to hear Rick passed away. He was in his early 50s, and I had the chance to meet him. Only talked to him very briefly that one time. But he did put a lot of work into the book, traveling up and down the East Coast, meeting with eyewitnesses. He spent some time with Stan and put a lot of Stan's reports in there for Pennsylvania. I know there's a lot of things in there from Maryland, from your state, and surrounding states in there, and it's definitely worth a read if you get a chance to do so.
Yeah, it's an excellent book. You know, we've lost a lot of Bigfoot researchers and investigators this past couple of years, and you know, hopefully the class we've got coming in are going to try to follow in the same footsteps as those that have departed. I don't know if that's going to happen, but you know, hopefully that, you know, people will stay serious in this and kind of add to it.
Yeah, let's hope so. And I think this book might be one of the things to keep people in it. You know, it's definitely a must read, and it is sad that we're losing people, but you know, there were good people that came before us, like Rick and others who have passed away, that, you know, kind of blazed the trail for us, and
uh-huh.
we got to keep pushing forward. It's, you know, if yep. it wasn't for people like those folks that you know, like Philip Spencer, for example, he passed away, a good friend of ours from Kentucky, just recently, and you know, if it wasn't for good guys like that, you know, to keep doing the good work that they were doing, that, you know, we wouldn't be where we are now. So we got to always keep forging ahead.
Sure. Yeah, I, you know, it's discouraging to me to see these guys pass away. And, you know, but, you know, a lot of them, we are fortunate to have met a lot of them, fortunate to have read what they've been able to discover and such. And, you know, and we've talked about this before. And, of course, with Stan coming on, it's going to be brought up. You know, this field, and with all cryptozoology, the new people coming in are going to probably have to have an open mind about the way things are researched now, because it does seem like things are connecting together, that there are some possible explanations to what things are. And I just tell anybody that wants to get into this, and I have actually told people this, you know, you got to keep an open mind. You really do. You just don't get set on one thing, one theory. You know, you got to be open minded to what may actually be going on, and keep at it.
Yeah, you do. You always have to keep an open mind when it comes to this kind of research, because you never know where the road's going to take you.
Oh, absolutely. And believe me, you know, there are a lot of forks in the road, and I've run into a lot of forks in the road, and there are things I believed before that I don't now, and vice versa. So it's, you know, that's the fun thing about it. You just never know what you're going to run into. You get to speak to a lot of great people who have actually been involved with it as well, and
yep.
I just hope that continues. You know, I just hope this field expands and goes beyond.
Well, I think it will. We got to jump into our first break, and it's kind of awkward doing it now, but we do have to take our first break. When we come back, our guest tonight is Stan Gordon. He is a longtime UFO, Bigfoot, strange creature, strange anomaly investigator from Pennsylvania. He'll be joining us up next on the show. You're listening to BTE Radio here on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, KPGZ LP, 102.7 FM, The Hog. We'll be back right after the break. Keep it right where it's at.
Back with more from the bad boys of alternative talk radio.
Good evening and welcome back to Beyond the Edge Radio. My name is Eric Altman, your host and producer of tonight's program. Thanks for tuning in this evening. It's 20 minutes after 8 o'clock here on the East Coast, and you're listening to BTE Radio live on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and KPGZ LP, 102.7 FM, The Hog. With me, as always, our co-host with the most, Lon Strickler. How you doing, Lon?
Still hanging in there.
Good. Glad to hear it tonight. Joining us tonight on the program, one of our favorite guests is returning. He's been on the program multiple times. I believe we counted at least 8 times that this guest has been back with us. One of our more popular guests, and my honest opinion, my favorite guest. He's my mentor and a very close friend of mine. I've known this gentleman for close to 30 years now. It's hard to believe, but yes, 30 years. You can learn all about him by going to his website, stangordon.info. There's a wonderful bio. There's sighting information. There's event information. You can pick up his two books on the website there. His DVD, Kecksburg, The Untold Story. There's a whole bunch of information. Just stop by during the show and check it out, stangordon.info. So I'm not going to talk anymore. I'm just going to introduce him to the program. You know him. You love him, Mr. Stan Gordon. Good evening, Stan. How you doing, sir?
Good evening, Eric. Thanks for having me back on the program.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Always a pleasure to have you with us. And you've been a busy man.
Yeah, it's a lot been going on. It never ends. I continue to get calls here almost every day. Got a call 4:15 this morning from, I think it was Georgia, if I remember, on a UFO sighting. But calls come in here all the time, almost every day on current or past reports. So it never ends. I've been taking calls, as you know, from the public since 1969. So now between the emails and the phone calls, no time for any rest.
What does this make now for you? About, 55 years?
This year will mark 55 years of research, having started back in 1959 when I was 10 years old.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And what keeps you keeps driving you to do this?
Well, I think what keeps driving you is the fact that people continually, year after year, have encounters with strange events, you know, strange creatures, UFO sightings, other phenomena, and many of these people have trouble dealing with it, and they don't know who to turn to. I mean, I run into this very commonly. And so it's dealing with witnesses. It's hoping that next phone call will lead you to a case that has that really definitive physical evidence that once and for all might solve one of these mysteries. And I guess I'm still hopeful that one of these days I might get to see a UFO or Bigfoot myself, which still hasn't happened.
Now, I was going to say, for all these years, you've never seen a UFO or experienced a Bigfoot.
That's correct. I think I was probably pretty close to a Bigfoot in more than one case during the 1973 outbreak when all the incidents were going on, but I never did see it, heard it, may have smelled it, but I never did see it.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Now, if you would have to, on a percentage scale, and this is just from my own curiosity, on a percentage scale, what would you say you would have to rate the possibility of Bigfoot existing?
I would say on a percentage scale, probably an 8 or a 9, but you know, as we talked before, the phenomenon is real. I've interviewed hundreds of people just from Pennsylvania who claim to have encountered these creatures. Reports continue year after year, including reports this year, and something is going on out there. The physical evidence, the secondary evidence we find with some of the cases, continues to support the fact that something's going on, but more and more, and again, we've talked about this, and I've mentioned this starting back in the 70s. I started writing about some of my findings that I think what we're dealing with is something possibly much stranger than a lot of people want to deal with, and the fact is that some of these Bigfoot cases seem to suggest that we might be dealing with something that's not a normal flesh-and-blood animal, as hard as that is for me to say.
That's something that's brought up all the time.
I was thinking the same thing, you know. Well, of course, I feel the same way. But, and you know, we've talked about this every time you've come on, Stan. But, you know, it does seem that more researchers are starting to get a more open-minded about this and are starting to look into it.
There is no doubt about that whatsoever. I've been doing a lot of lectures and doing a lot of radio shows over the last couple of years, especially since my Silent Invasion book came out. And you know, I really thought that there would be a lot of negativity to it from the Bigfoot community and from others in the field. And 99% of what I'm getting, the reaction, has been very, very positive. Mm-hmm. Several years ago, I spoke out in Oregon at a big UFO conference, and I talked about the incidents I had with UFOs and Bigfoot seen together. And that's right in the middle of the heavy concentration where a lot of Bigfoot activity goes on. So there was a lot of key Bigfoot people there. And I expected that there would be quite a reaction from those. And instead, I mean, soon after the program and in many calls and emails I got later, I had a huge amount of support. And the fact from researchers out there saying, we're so glad you brought this up because the same thing is going on out here. We have trails of tracks stop and vanish. People shooting at them, not bringing them down, or they disappear. They're so reluctant to talk about it because they're afraid of being ridiculed. And I mentioned this back in the 70s.
Sure.
That I was in contact with multitudes of researchers throughout the country and around the world, that many of these other researchers knew of these cases, some experienced things themselves. They knew of these type of events, but they were reluctant to publish it or talk about it because they were afraid of being laughed at by their peers. My position has been, I don't have the answers. I'm reporting my findings. I'm out there looking for the evidence. This is what I found, and I'm hopeful that other people have this knowledge will come forward so we can all share it and try to learn from it.
You know, I used to have a lot of pushback years ago, and but now I'll be quite honest with you. I like you said, I very rarely get much pushback on it, and which is great. I mean, I've been talking about everybody that researches the supernatural, paranormal. You know, there may be a connection with all this, so you just got to keep an open mind.
Well, you know, when I started this back, you know, in the early days, like I said, I was 10 years old, but I really began my field research in 1965 after the Keksberg UFO incident. Mm-hmm. So I've been out there in the field since that time doing firsthand research. So that's led to my investigation to thousands of UFO cases, hundreds of Bigfoot cases, and multitudes of other strange creature reports and other phenomena. And that 73 event, you know, as we are out there doing all these investigations, we can get into it if you want to. We've talked before about it. But I wasn't out there looking for these type of things. These were reports. And you got to remember, back in 73, there wasn't a lot of TV shows about this. We didn't have the Internet. It was not a lot of people really knew much about Bigfoot in general. And as this outbreak in Pennsylvania was going on for weeks and months into 1974, a lot of these calls and a lot of these events were first being reported to the police departments. And then a lot of them were being referred to my research group to investigate. And I wasn't out there looking for UFOs and Bigfoot. I mean, I was out there looking for the fact that if Bigfoot's real, it's probably some type of unknown primate. But as these reports began to come in from widespread areas over a long period of time from different people, and we began to see the patterns developing, and then some extremely well-documented cases with UFOs and Bigfoot seen together at the same time and place. And then as you began to question the people, and we were very careful how we interviewed people, because I had a lot of professional investigators with me. I had former military intelligence people, police officers, psychologists, all kind of scientists who were out doing the research with me in the field. We were kind of a unique type of group. We are careful not to put words or try to make the people say something. We were very careful what terminology we used. We wanted them to tell us, and we began to see so many strange but similar reports from different people from widespread areas, and we began to see that some people were reporting on their property after having a Bigfoot sighting, strange lights, strange craft, or vice versa, and describing to us reluctantly other type of paranormal events that had been taking place on their property. So I discovered many, many years ago there may indeed be some type of interaction, don't know what it is, between various types of paranormal phenomena and UFOs and Bigfoot and very well other type of cryptozoological creatures as well.
Well, you know, I had my sighting 33 years ago, and to be quite honest with you, I still don't know what this was. Mm-hmm. You know, I can only speculate and say what I saw and say, well, you know, look, maybe it was a Bigfoot. It was a primate. Maybe it was, I don't know, you know, and that's just it. You know, these Bigfoot sightings or these hominid sightings, the descriptions are so much, they're so different when you just boil down to it. And there are differences. Yeah, I mean, when you're talking about, you know, maybe there are flesh and blood beings out there that people are calling Sasquatch and Bigfoot. But then again, there's something else out there as well.
Yeah, and there's very strong similarities, but at the same time, there's some differences. And mm-hmm. one of the things that, of course, showed up here is that, you know, we had the typical five-toed footprints. I mean, been reported historically in Pennsylvania for many, many years. But during the 73 event and other times since then, three-toed footprints have shown up. Mm-hmm. But again, a lot of people are unaware that in other parts of the country, Pacific Northwest and California, areas where there's a history of a high concentration of Bigfoot activity, you also had five-toed and three-toed and sometimes even four-toed tracks showing up.
Mm-hmm.
And then here in Pennsylvania, numerous cases over the years that I investigated, my teams did, where we went out to investigate cases, very credible people, and there was footprints found and sometimes casts made of the tracks. and they were completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Completely different. But yet, some of those tracks, for example, sometimes would be years later, but the same type of tracks are somewhere else in the country around the world. So that's another part of the mystery. You know, it's hard enough to believe that you could have one type of unknown specimen out there, and yet you look at all these other possible, not apparent hoaxes, but other very strange footprints, and you got a question, what's going on there? How can there be so many type of unknown species going on out there? It doesn't make any sense unless there's something that is similar to the origin of how or what these things might be. You know, it's very, very strange. And there's many, many strange aspects of the Bigfoot phenomenon that a lot of people don't know about. And in fact, a lot of things that people probably don't want to know about. But they're there, and they keep showing up. And I've said for years and years, the phenomenon is so strange it protects itself.
Well, you know, I really haven't mentioned this before, but, you know, when I had my sighting, and then we did the television show back in February, back in November,
yeah.
I got to meet John Lutz, and you know John
yeah.
Lutz, but he was involved in the original flap, or the Sykesville Monster flap back in 72 and 73.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I met him, and he had the cast, and when I saw that cast, I thought to myself, well, there's no way this thing I saw matched that cast. There's no way.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's so much different. So, you know, is there something else walking around or was walking around or
yeah.
roaming that area? Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, like I said, there's so many weird things. For example, you know, back in 73 again, and I talk about in the Silent Invasion book, you had all these different creature sightings. Many of the Bigfoot reports were very similar, but in some cases there were some differences. And, for example, up in Pittsburgh during the time all this was going on, there was a wooded area up there. I believe it was a gas line, gas tank in that area. And people were seeing some type of a monkey-like creature. More than one person saw it up in those woods. But in those areas, what were found were pongent or ape tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And there's I have a very good picture and a copy of the cast was taken up there. And it's completely different, but you have your four toes and then you have your toe up to the side. And as Eric remembers, there was that case up there in the reservoir that Rick Fisher looked at with the hundreds of tracks several years ago.
Waynesboro.
Up in Waynesboro, okay. Mm-hmm. And just for example, this past December, December 2nd of this year, north of Greensburg, several hunters came across a series of very strange footprints. They were very experienced, had never seen like it before. They called me. I got out into the woods as a terrible rainstorm hit, and as I'm watching the tracks in front of me, they're washing out, but I got some pictures of them. But they were about 11 and a half inches long, about 5.5 inches wide, but once again, they were pungent tracks or ape tracks, and that's a mystery. And that adds to the mystery, and I don't know how this is, but one of the more recent cases I'm working on just happened the last few weeks. This is up in Somerset County. We're still looking at it, but I received game cam photographs of what appeared to be a monkey that was taken on the game cam. And it's pretty clear. So, you know, there's just, you know, it could be an escaped monkey. We generally hear about it when it happens, but not always. But then you got all these other mysteries, like what is going on out there?
Well, I don't know what to say about that. You know, can you talk about this recent sighting, the one in, what was it, May 17th, that you and Eric were working on?
Yeah, Eric and I went down. I got the call on it, and I did some initial interviews, and we went down and talked to the father who was involved. It was a father and his teenage daughter, and that was May 17th. It was, as I recall, after 11 o'clock that night. I believe it was Route 201 outside of West Newton. Now, that's an area where there has been a long history mm-hmm. of Bigfoot activity. In fact, some of the earliest Bigfoot reports I started to investigate was around West Newton and Lober, which is not far from that area. West Newton, Lober, yeah, general area. And there had been reports of a white hairy creature seen in the swampy area back in the late 60s, and they had found some footprints down there. So that was one of the first cases I looked into. But the father and the teenage daughter were coming down the road, and they were coming around the corner of this road, and off to the right, they saw this figure was stooped down that rose up from the road and walked out onto that road in front of the vehicle. He had to swerve into the left lane to miss hitting it, and relatively tall. He only saw it for seconds. He said it was covered with what appeared to be black fur all over the body and arms swinging. And the most outstanding feature, which we still hear about occasionally in Bigfoot, was that the eyes were subluminescent. Now, he thought they were kind of more of a whitish with a blue tinge, but the daughter thought they were a little more greenish in color. And he said, now, as he's driving down the road, he looked in the rearview mirror. It was standing in the middle of the road looking towards them, and he could still see the eye shine, but it wasn't as bright. So that probably would indicate that it wasn't any reflection from the headlights.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a matter of seconds, and no smell, no sound. Only lasted seconds, the whole thing. He was curious enough. He wanted to go back and look at it again, but the daughter was scared to death and didn't want to go back.
Let's hold that thought. We got to take a quick break, Stan. You're listening to Beyond the Edge Radio live here on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and KPGZ LP 102.7 FM, The Hog. When we come back, we'll find out what happened with the father and the daughter and this strange sighting that took place in West Newton. Keep it right here. We'll be right back.
Stick around if you dare. Beyond the Edge Radio. We'll be right back. Beyond the Edge Radio is back.
Welcome back to tonight's program. This is BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge Radio. We are live here on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and KPGZ LP 102.7 FM, The Hog, out of Excelsior Springs, Missouri. My name is Eric Altman, your host and producer of tonight's show, and along with me, Lon Strickler, your co-host for this evening's events. Our guest tonight on the program is Stan Gordon, longtime paranormal UFO and strange creature researcher from Greensburg, Pennsylvania. And we were right in the middle of a very interesting, most recent investigation that Stan was talking about of a strange cryptid creature that was almost hit by a father and daughter driving down a highway in West Newton, Pennsylvania. Stan, please continue with the investigation.
Okay. Well, it was pretty brief. You were down there as well. And, you know, one thing that came up in that case and has come up in many other cases, something I noticed many years ago that I talked about, is that not only do you have a lot of UFO sightings around high energy sources, but you also have a lot of Bigfoot sightings and other cryptozoological events around high-energy sources as well. One thing you noticed, and we both noticed down in that area, was that there was a whole series of high-tension power lines right across that area. In fact, the high-tension lines crossed right over top of the road where the incident happened. And that's something I found so many times with Bigfoot cases. They occur around areas of power stations, high-tension power lines, railroad tracks, gas lines, gas wells. Goes on and on and on. There seems to be an energy association with a lot of this phenomena that we're dealing with.
Oh yeah, I can't count how many cases that you and I have investigated either together or independently where we've come across sightings where people have claimed to see them near gas well lines or gas pumps or electric lines, or like the case in Greensburg we investigated in 2004, or was it 2004, where the family said it was seen in the backyard of their property, and sure enough, we did a little hike in there above their property, and we found that the electrical cell phone towers.
Yeah, that was interesting. As you remember, they had like that garden area. It looked like somebody just plowed right through it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then we found that area over there was much bigger than a deer lay, and was very, very odd. As though something had been resting in that area, not the typical area that the deer would go into and make that type of configuration.
Yeah, it was a very strange case. And a lot of these cases, and that seems to be the common factor, is that they take place near like a gas well line or an electrical power line or something to that effect. I've got many cases where they've been reported near gas pumps or oil pumps or these power lines. It's just bizarre.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, you know, it's just also like this Seas case, you know. I mean, of course, you never know for Bigfoot what would be involved. But, you know, there was a UFO sighting at the same time, and this was at one of those high-tension power lines. You know, that's where it was seen at. And, you know, there was another sighting not long ago at the same area by those high-tension lines. So, it does seem to be a UFO anomaly that does seem to happen a lot. And, you know, if these hominids are being seen there as well, you know, you got to start thinking connection somehow.
There's something to it.
Yeah, there is definitely something to it. I mean,
not sure what.
There is. You know, and, you know, I know, you know, what you've talked about before, Eric, up there around those gas lines where you guys have got that research area. Yeah, that's interesting.
That's very possible. Now, Stan, you had some other cases you wanted to share with us that you've investigated recently as well.
Well, there's been a lot of reports, and, I mean, there's some of them on my website. Unfortunately, as you know, I'm just getting over some I had a really bad case of something. I had a terrible cough for like 7 weeks and was down a little bit, so I got way behind on a website work. So a lot of other reports I have, which I have not had time to get on the website, they continue to come in all the time. And, of course, some of them I can figure out pretty well, especially with UFO cases. A lot of them, in fact, there's been a lot of Chinese lantern reports over the last few months that people have been launching, especially around the holidays like Memorial Day. So you knew you're going to get those type of reports. Mm-hmm. But from last year, we mentioned about the hunters finding those hunter or ape-like tracks in early December. Now, in late December, back along the Chestnut Ridge again, as we've talked about, the Chestnut Ridge is a mountain range that stretches from Preston County, West Virginia, through Westmoreland, Fayette, and Indiana County. It's historically probably one of the most active areas in the country year after year for UFO sightings, Bigfoot encounters, occasional Thunderbird reports, Black Panthers, mountain lions, all kind of weird phenomena goes on year after year along the ridge, especially over that dairy side. For whatever reason, why so many weird things have happened over on the dairy side of the ridge for so many years, we just don't know. But in late December last year, early morning, around 3 o'clock in the morning, a fellow was driving a truck through the area. So this guy's up in the truck about 7 feet off the ground. It was very foggy and hazy morning. He could hardly see. But all of a sudden, something runs across the road in front of his truck. It was kind of broad-shouldered and dark. He caught a face, for instance, and they're gone. But at that 7 foot tall, because he was that high up in the truck, was very, very shook up over it. He went back, I believe, a couple days later, and they looked around the area, and he and his friend found a series of very strange footprints in the frozen ice, which I think you may have seen that picture. I don't think I have it on my website at this point, but it's a very interesting photograph that were taken down there. So that's kind of interesting. Same area again where we've had, not far from there, a Thunderbird report last year, and Bigfoot activity all through that area for years and years. So it's another question of why is it happening in those specific areas so often. January 29th near Madison, which again is not too far from West Newton. In daylight, two witnesses saw this object in the sky that he said it looked almost like a cruise missile, but stationary in the sky. It was cigar-shaped, kind of white or silver. They couldn't really tell because of the bright sun. It had no markings, made no sound. It had short wings on the one side that were way too small to support the size of the craft. And it hovered, and then it began to move off towards Pittsburgh. In February, down in Schuylkill County, eastern parts of Pennsylvania, that's when you might recall they were having that very heavy snowstorms, like foot and a half of snow. Up in a mountain area down there, there were apparently a number of Bigfoot incidents going on. I talked to one person down there, was staying at a friend's house. It's a very secluded area up in the mountain. And apparently this one evening, she had a very, very large dog. And she said that was the first time, I believe she said in 8 years, that dog was ever scared and cowered. It stood behind her growling. she heard something heavy walking in the snow close by the house, shined her a flashlight to see this huge 8-foot-tall creature with long arms taking big strides in the heavy snow. And I am pretty certain on this. I talked to this person again several weeks ago, but I'm pretty certain on this that she said to me, she said, it was so the next morning because here's this whole trail of tracks in the snow where they suddenly stopped and disappeared. So I'm pretty sure that's the one that dealt with that particular event. And Eric may recall that in March, we were up on the ridge investigating some reports up around the Youngstown side of the ridge, and there were reports from both Youngstown and Dairy Ridge. I was receiving reports of unusual tracks being found up there, and also from Armstrong County. I was receiving reports from a property where supposedly these Bigfoot creatures have been coming back on and off for the last year or so. And a person up there reported hearing screams or something banging on the house and that type of thing in the past. So that was interesting. In June, just a few weeks ago, I was getting reports of a possible mountain lion or cougar sighting down in the Mon Valley area up in the Fayette County. And I got another call on this yesterday, so I'm going to be talking to another witness who apparently saw it around the same time period. A lot of UFO reports continue to come in from around the Pittsburgh area, around North Huntington. So these on, and that's just some of the reports that have been coming in.
Yeah, and some of those reports that you've got, like from Armstrong and up in like Chestnut, as you said, those are ones that we've investigated either for the first time or getting follow-up reports on that we've checked out in the past and seemed like pretty viable and credible witnesses when we've talked to them the first time around.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems to be something going on out there. Now, one case with the video is kind of interesting. You know, we may want to go back and do a follow-up on that one these days, but there was something on there that seemed quite interesting. The one up there on the one side of the ridge.
Yeah, I'm still not sure what's in that video.
Me either. I'm not sure.
Put that up on my Facebook page to get some opinions on that, and I've had a variety of opinions from cat, dog, rabbit, possum, raccoon, bear, deer, you know, you name it. I've had a variety of different opinions on what it could be. So who knows?
Yeah, that's right. Who knows? So we see so many of these game cam shots and videos, but unfortunately they're not detailed enough to really tell you anything.
Right, and they're usually, like this one was, it was only like 2 or 3 seconds, if that, and it was so quick that you couldn't get enough information from the video to really get a good answer or get a really good idea of what you were looking at.
That's correct.
So,
but what you have to look at is what the witnesses claimed that actually happened during the time they videotaped it, so it makes you wonder.
Exactly.
Stan, I've been wanting to ask you this for a while now, and now that I'm thinking about it, I got to ask you. Have you ever run across a case in Pennsylvania of human and Bigfoot interaction or habituation?
Are you talking about cases where, and I didn't hear, you cut out a little bit at the end. Are you talking about cases where people have allegedly have some type of, like, communication with a Bigfoot?
Right.
Very, very rarely. I can only think of a few cases. And these were not people who had any history of being interested with. One of them, I can think off the top of my head, back in the 80s, in an area where there was an outbreak of Bigfoot activity, which all started with a UFO falling out of the sky, supposedly, and soon after screams and Bigfoot sightings in the area, and soon after an outbreak of Black Panther sightings in the same area, which has happened before, which adds to the mystery even more. But and this is from memory, so you just got me memory experience. Mm-hmm. Now, I remember this guy saying he had this mental impression or feeling something was telling him in his brain, and I think this was before or maybe the first time he had seen the creature. Something told him, go back down to the gas line. Here we go again, the energy thing, the gas line.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he went down there, I believe, when he saw the creature for the first time. But I'd have to go back to those old records and look, but I'm pretty sure that's correct.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, because of all the sightings that you reported on, I was just wondering if you had ever had anything like that. It's cool.
It's been very, very rare.
Yeah.
In a couple cases when I was interviewing these people, you knew they had something they were reluctant to tell about the experience in the first place.
Right.
And then as you got to talk to them, they began to ease up a little, and they realized that you were there and you were serious and you weren't going to laugh at them. You knew that there was something else they wanted to tell you, but they were reluctant to do it. But finally, some of them very reluctantly would bring these really unusual facts to you. And it's not just what the telepathic thing, which is very, very rare. Like I said, I could probably count on one or two hands those cases compared to the hundreds I've investigated. But many other people have reluctantly brought up, you know, other paranormal events or seeing strange lights or other weird things going on in their home. But they were so reluctant to talk about it because they were afraid they were going to be laughed at. And they didn't realize that so many other people have told us the same type of thing over the years.
Well, I can understand that, believe me. Because I didn't talk about mine for a long time. And yeah, absolutely. Now, as far as UFO activity goes, have you noticed that maybe recently you're getting more daylight reports?
I'm thinking here. I do get daylight reports. One thing I have been seeing in the last couple of years, or I'm seeing in the reports coming in, have been continuing reports of the smaller, what I call mini UFOs, reports of objects that are very close range, but they're small, anywhere from a few inches, about a foot in diameter. And I've been talking about those since the 60s, but a lot of people are not aware of them. And some of those have been daylight sightings. What I have seen in the last few years are more reports like the classic UFO cases we used to hear about in the 50s and 60s, early 70s, of not lights in the sky, but large structured craft, very close ground, or in some producing some type of electromagnetic effect on the surroundings or on vehicles. And in the last 2-3 years, I'm seeing more detailed close-range sightings that have been very significant, including the one that happened June 1st last year on Route 30 in North Huntington Township, maybe, 25 miles east of Pittsburgh. So it's between Pittsburgh and Greensburg. And it was a very significant case. The family called me to come out to investigate it. And here was a woman who did not believe in UFOs, and I've said this many times in the past, some of the best witnesses, whether it be to a UFO or Bigfoot or other phenomena, are people who would never have believed that these things could exist until they had their own personal experience. And many times, they're life-changing experiences for the people involved.
Oh, I agree with you on that. Yeah, I feel the best witnesses are somebody who has no interest in the paranormal.
Right,
and,
right.
Now, these, yeah, you're right. These large craft sightings have been more, and consistent, too. And it kind of makes me wonder if these are actually man-made to the most, to the bigger extent. But there have been a lot of these, these cylinder-shaped craft. And, of course, the top triangle craft, which I believe are probably man-made. But there are a lot of larger type of craft being seen.
Over the last several weeks, or maybe the last month or two, I should say, I'm losing track of time of all the reports coming in, I've had reports of, and we're getting more and more reports of large rectangular objects, large solid box-shaped objects, including one was solid black, seen very low over trees down the Mon Valley, I guess about a month and a half, 2 months ago. Now, I lost a little bit of track of time. I have to go back and look at the report. But we're seeing more and more reports. This case that happened June 1st, I started to tell you about, of a woman on Route 30 again in the North Huntington Township.
Before we jump into that, Stan, we've got to take a break at the top of the hour here.
Okay.
So can you hold off on that? We'll come back and tell that one?
Sure.
Okay. We're going to go ahead and jump into our 9 o'clock break and let everybody know that you are listening to Beyond the Edge Radio live here on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and KPGZLP 102.7 FM, The Hog. We invite you to stay right where you're at because Stan has a very riveting, very close UFO sighting that took place in North Huntington Township that he's going to talk about when we come back. So make sure you keep it right here. We'll be back after the break. Stay right where you're at.
Are you scared yet? Beyond the Edge Radio will be right back.
to Beyond the Edge Radio.
Welcome back to Beyond the Edge Radio, live here on the Para X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and KPGZ, LP 102.7 FM, The Hog, out of Excelsior Springs, Missouri. Thank you for joining us tonight here on the program. We've got a great conversation going with our guest tonight, Stan Gordon. You can check out his website, stangordon.info. He's got some great information there. You can pick up his books off of the website, plus his DVD, Kecksburg, The Untold Story. His books are called Really Mysterious Pennsylvania and Silent Invasion, the Pennsylvania UFO Bigfoot Casebook. They are all available for sale on his site. And just some of the cases that we're talking about tonight on the show, and we're going to be getting involved in some of the older cases as well as time permits. You can find those in those books. And Stan is going to be making some appearances around the Pennsylvania area coming up. And a little bit later in the show, he'll be telling you how you can meet him and get an autographed copy of one of those books, or two of the books and the DVD you can pick up as well. So we were just about to talk about a very unusual sighting that took place, Stan, and I interrupted you. So let's get back into that interesting encounter you were about to share with us.
Well, that was June 1st of last year. And a woman and her three-year-old child, they're just pulling out of a convenience store around 10 o'clock at night, and they're making a left. They're heading on Route 30 eastbound, kind of towards Greensburg in that general direction. She's riding down the road in that four-lane highway, and suddenly she has to slow down, almost stop in the middle of Route 30, because just a short distance away, here's this huge rectangular metallic object about 60 feet above the roadway, taking up all four lanes of the highway. It's a solid metallic object. The lighting configuration is completely unlike that of navigational lighting. It's making no sound. Her three-year-old child exclaims out to his mother, "Look, Mommy, a flying iPad in the sky." And anyhow, she has to pass underneath it. So when she passes underneath it, the electronics on her dash all goes out. So the clock goes out. The FM radio station she's listening to goes off the air. She was on the cell phone talking. She lost her cell phone signal. She tried to take a picture with her iPhone or iCamera or iPad, and it wouldn't let her go into the camera mode. And that's something we can talk about, because that's happened in other cases as well. She pulled away from the object, and as she went down the road, all the electronics came back on. Now, that's something we used to hear about quite a bit in the 50s and 60s, but you don't hear about it that often anymore. And that was a woman who didn't believe in UFOs that has now changed her mind. And but once again, that's an area around there where we're getting quite a number of interesting UFO cases, have historically, but from other widespread areas, we're getting more reports of these large, solid, rectangular objects, like big boxcars in the sky. One fellow who's an amateur astronomer saw a formation of kind of off gold rectangular, I believe like six or seven of these things, flying over the Greensburg area, and he said it looked like a train going across the sky. Mm. He was just amazed, and he couldn't believe it. So many other people weren't calling in to report this, but, you know, so many people aren't even looking up. You walk down the street of the town or go out in the mall and look in the parking lot, people are never looking up. They're always looking down. Mm. So something could be going on right over top of them. They may never see it.
Well, you know, this triangle phenomena, I mean, here where I live at in Baltimore, it has been going on for a good while. I mean, these things show up in the middle of the day, now just for a brief second, and then they vanish. There was a report in one of the park areas in Baltimore City where this thing showed up, huge object, yeah. Huge triangle object, and just vanished. You know, one thing, they don't even have a chance to take a picture of it, but yeah. It's, you know.
Well, I'll give you an example. There are multitudes of triangle reports in Pennsylvania I've worked on, mm-hmm. and many of them over highly populated areas. Mm-hmm. And my feeling is these are not experimental government aircraft, because these reports go on frequently. They continue to occur over highly populated areas. There's been reports over the Pennsylvania Turnpike. There have been sightings over major cities in Pennsylvania. there's too many reports. The government has hundreds of miles restricted airspace that's set up so they are able to fly experimental aircraft, such as Nevada and California.
Mm-hmm.
In Pennsylvania and other parts of the country, there are too many frequent reports, and it's not just the triangular objects. You've got the big cigar-shaped objects. You've got all different type of different configurations, sometimes larger objects emitting smaller ones. It makes no sense. And, you know, you've heard many times about the Phoenix Lights, which, you know, many photographs and videos were taken of that series of lights, but a lot of people don't know that we had a major incident, I believe it was February of 92, over Williamsport, Pennsylvania. It made the news down there for days. It should have made national news. Hundreds of people were involved, late afternoon, populated area, one or more very large boomerang or triangular object, you know, hundreds of 250 feet off the ground. Now, you know, a lot of UFO cases, they're completely silent, but in some cases, they make a horrific sound. This one was making a sound like a train coming down the road, and people were, and they were shaking windows, and animals were getting upset, and people were running outside to see what was causing this noise, to see this huge metallic object hovering very low, and some people were walking underneath. The thing was moving so slow, people were walking underneath and keeping up with it. And, I mean, there were multitudes of witnesses, you know, police officers, and people had been in the military, and people, I talked to some people who had saw this thing, who had lived on military base, and they said, this thing was bigger than a C-5A Galaxy. And, I mean, there was a huge investigation done on this case. I had the Air Force involved, the Navy involved, the FAA involved. It wasn't being tracked by radar by the airport close by. Multitudes of people saw it in more than one county that afternoon. And it was a significant case, much better than the Phoenix Lights, and yet it was only making local news.
You know, why is that? Why is the media in the United States kind of ignore this stuff? I mean, as opposed to what it is in Europe. Have you thought about that?
You know, to be honest, Juan, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. I've had very good contacts with the media in Pennsylvania. And I can just tell you from my own experience, I've had very, very poor in general from a lot of the media in Pennsylvania who have followed my investigations, looked into the research I've done, and, you know, I can say I really have not had any significant problems with media. But, you know, a lot of things happened over the years, and things were done a lot different back when I was doing things back,
sure,
you know, in the late 60s, 70s, 80s, into the 90s. You know, things are done a lot different today with the media, and there's a lot of reasons why sometimes stories get out and sometimes they don't. But in the greater Pittsburgh area, a lot of the media I dealt with, and I dealt with them in many, many situations, you know, with news stories and radio and TV, and a lot of them really supported very well the research we were doing and gave it very positive support. So I really can't complain about it myself.
Mm. No, it just seems to me that, you know, any type of anomaly, I mean, a lot of it is tabloid, but, you know, especially over in Great Britain, it seems like any type of anomaly, and it doesn't matter who's reporting, it gets, you know, it gets put in a paper, local paper, one of the big tabloids, as opposed to here. I mean, you just very, very, very rarely hear about it.
Right. But back in the early days, I call it the early days, back in the 70s and 80s and 90s, when I was very active, when my groups were very active, it was very common back then for the local papers to quite often pick such stories up.
Mm-hmm.
But things have changed around. It's a lot different today.
Yeah. Well, you got anything, Eric?
I was just sitting back listening to what you guys were talking about, the media involved and how things have changed.
I mean, it is an interesting it's interesting to me that all that stuff gets reported out there. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, but like I said, you know, Stan deals with the media all the time. So, you know, maybe it's because of his reputation that he does get such good press, you know, because of it. You think that maybe it's Stan?
Well, you know, a lot of the reporters from the 70s and 80s, a lot of them are retired, a lot of them are now deceased.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting a whole new group of younger reporters out there So things have changed over the years.
Yeah.
And but also what you got to realize is you got to remember this. Even today, the high percentage of witnesses who see these things are reluctant to go to the newspapers.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, that's true.
I will receive reports. Eric will get reports. Others will. Many of them will come to me. The first thing they'll say is, I don't want you to think I'm crazy, and I don't want you to use my name. You get that all the time from people.
Well, I get
so,
it all the time.
Unless
too.
They get it from my website or something else happens, they get the report somehow, you don't hear about it a lot. What you generally see a lot of responses, if we get a big fireball meteor come over and lots of people report saying this fireball of the media, then you'll get a news coverage story on it.
Oh, yeah.
But a general UFO story, very rarely do you see it anymore. And I think still a lot of it is now that it's because a lot of witnesses don't generally call the police anymore like they did back in the early days. Now they go to the Internet and try to contact somebody through the Internet.
Well, this leads into another phenomena that is prevalent in, especially in Western Pennsylvania, of these Thunderbird sightings. Now, has there been a recent sighting? I know you've been reporting on this. You did mention when we were off the air about the one down in West Virginia, and I talked about the one in Virginia. What do you make of all these huge bird sightings?
Well, they're very interesting. You know, the one in West Virginia, that was in the fall of 2007. I think it's a very fascinating case. I mentioned it in my Really Mysterious Pennsylvania book, even though it's from neighboring West Virginia. But it was a case outside of Clendenin, West Virginia, in the fall of 2007. And the guy's going down the road around 8 o'clock in the morning, a two-lane highway, and he has to stop and hit his brakes real hard because there's this giant bird blocking a road right in front of him. It's eating roadkill.
Uh-huh.
And the guy said, he said he thinks that thing looked at him. It was as startled to see him as he was startled to see it. But he said it stood at least 4 feet tall because the head of that creature was above the liner of his vehicle. And gave me a very detailed description of what it looked like. But he said, of course, the most amazing feature was this huge wingspan. And he said this thing, it was hopping from one leg to another very awkwardly, trying to get off the ground because it was so big. And it's flapping these huge wings. And he said he's watching the ends of the wingtips on the edge of the roadway because all this gravel and dust and dirt is flying up at the edge of the wings. And finally he gets off the ground and goes up over the trees and it's gone. And he went back the next day to measure the width of the roadway because he was so close and saw the end of the wings. It was 21 feet across.
Mm.
Now, he went and started doing a lot of research in the library, and he said the closest thing he could find was a prehistoric bird that was even close to what he saw.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that very interesting. But actually, there was an incident, and let me see if I can look this report up here. There was an incident that just happened in July, down the road in Chinette, pretty much in Eric's backyard, interviewed this guy. He's very credible. On the afternoon of March 25th of this year, the guy was taking a walk near Chinette, happened to look up the sky. Now, around here, you know, we have a lot of small aircraft landing strips and small airports. Then we have Greater Pittsburgh and all, too.
Uh-huh.
So this guy, as many people around here, they're used to commonly seeing, like, single-engine aircraft and up at a certain altitude and flying to hear their engines or whatever. So this particular afternoon, the guy's looking up in the sky, and he's looking to the east, and he thought he was a Piper Cub. He was looking at a Piper Cub, but it seemed to move a little too fast for a small aircraft like that. And then he noticed that the wings were turned up at the end and realized what he was seeing was not a small plane but a huge bird. And he said it glided towards the west and brushed the clouds at times. He never saw it flap its wings, but he said at the altitude it was, he would estimate that wingspan was at least 15 feet across, being the fact that he sees small aircraft up there at that altitude quite often. He ran into the house to get a pair of binoculars, and by the time he got out, it was moving off and he couldn't see it. So that's the most recent report I've had of something. But they come in from different people from different areas.
Yeah, I've seen several, many from Pennsylvania as well. Now, most of my reports, which is strange, I think, come from the upper Midwest, but there have been a lot of them in Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the history goes back to the Black Forest region of Pennsylvania, up in northern Pennsylvania. That's where historically you hear a lot of reports from going way back in the old days, but reports come in from throughout the state. And so they continue on and on. And then we had that incident last year, May 17th, which coincidentally is the same date as the Bigfoot sighting that happened this year near West Newton. But anyhow, May 17th last year, now here we go again along the Chestnut Ridge in Derry Township. So here's a guy who's coming back from fishing at Laurel Handle Lake in Derry Township between 4 and 5 in the afternoon, so it's daylight. He's on his motorcycle, and he's heading towards New Derry. He's moving about 40 miles an hour. And all of a sudden, this huge bird crosses his path from left to right, 10 feet ahead of him, but it's only 10 feet off the ground. And he said, I saw for several seconds, it was dark brown or black in color, the neck was short, the body was large, and he noticed it had a huge tail. But he said, what was so amazing was the wingspan was just gigantic. And he saw the bird flap its monstrous wings twice, had been moved into a thickly wooded area, but he said he would estimate that wingspan at least 20 feet or more in length.
It's a big bird.
Yeah. Well, there is nothing like that we know of.
No.
You know, not in this part of the world and not existing today. You know, we have that, I think it's called a wandering albatross out in the Southern Ocean, and that's the biggest living bird, well, the bird with the biggest wingspans living. It's a little over 11 feet in width. But that's out in the ocean, and an albatross is completely different in appearance what people are describing around here. The condor, which is something in the United States, is a big bird. It's around a little over 10-foot wingspan.
Right.
But again, the descriptions are not the same. And, you know, while I'm kind of putting together these giant flying cryptids under thunderbirds, there is some differences. Now, some of the thunderbird reports, they're just huge, generally dark brown or black bodies on it with huge wingspans. But in some cases, the reports are a little different. Some are reporting what appear to be huge leathery bats, gigantic bat-type things. Some people swear they're seeing something that looks more like a pterodactyl that's prehistoric. And there's a few that said these things look more like gargoyles. So you've got this mixture of different kind of huge flying cryptids. There's similarities, yet there's differences.
Yeah, I mean, these pterosaur reports, well, you know, I've heard a lot of them out in the western part of the country, southwestern part of the country. You know, people believe there may actually be flyways between Mexico and the United States. I don't know. But, I mean, there people have been reporting these things, and I've received reports myself. So somebody's seeing something.
Yeah, but, it gets down to when you really get into a lot of this stuff, and a lot of the stuff is so bizarre and so strange. Just like, you know, we were talking about the Black Panther sightings, where there's been a history of Black Panther sightings in Pennsylvania for many, many years. There's multitudes of reports. I mean, in the last couple of years, I've interviewed hunters and people in daylight who are 30 feet away from these creatures. Yet nothing's missing. They rarely ever escape from a zoo or a carnival. These sightings go on and on and on. Back in the 80s, I should remember this date, and I'll probably think about it in a minute, in a suburb of Pittsburgh, we had an incident. It was in the Bloomfield area of Pittsburgh, and there was a fellow. He was a mechanic, and he was working on a car at a large dealership on the dealership in the Bloomfield area of Pittsburgh, so it's a very populated area. And he was working that morning, I believe, putting it on a car, when all of a sudden this huge Black Panther dives over a fence which separated the parking area over there where he worked from a very large wooded area. And here's this huge Black Panther with a dead animal hanging out of his mouth staring at this guy. I mean, he could smell it. He could look at the filthy teeth. He could hear it. And the thing looked at him, stared, and jumped back over the fence. Well, a short time later, several other people saw the big one and the small one together. Well, that led to a massive search by the Pittsburgh police and animal crews with tranquilizer guns, and they searched and searched. Historically, that area is called Panther Hollow, and, of course, they never found anything. Now, one of the guys in my group was a Special Forces guy. This guy was a professional tracker. He went out there, and he tracked it for a pretty good distance and lost the tracks. But this has been going on for years, and it goes on with all the cryptids. People see them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they leave physical evidence, and then they're gone. Where do they come from? Where do they go? Whether it's Bigfoot or Thunderbirds or Black Panthers or Mothman or these flying cryptids, it's the same thing.
And we'll continue to talk about it after we come back from the break. You're listening to BTE Radio live here on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and KPGZ LP 102.7 FM, The Hog. We'll be back with more BTE Radio right after this.
Kick back, relax, and crack a cold one. Beyond the Edge Radio, we'll be right back. Lock your doors.
Lock your doors.
Lock your doors.
Lock your doors.
And open your minds. Beyond the Edge Radio is back.
And welcome back to BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge Radio. We are live here on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and KPGZ LP 102.7 FM, The Hog, out of Excelsior Springs, Missouri. I am your host and producer of tonight's show, Eric Altman, and along with me, Lon Strickler from Phantoms and Monsters and Astral Perceptions. We are talking with Stan Gordon tonight, longtime Fortean investigator of all strange and unusual things, mainly UFOs, Bigfoot, and strange creatures. He's been doing this for almost 55 years now, 55 years this year, and looking into unusual phenomenon. And we were talking about the Black Panther sightings before we had to rudely interrupt you there, Stan, and jump into a break. And it is strange how some of these creatures just show up in some of the strangest areas, but one person will see them, or maybe a handful of people will see them, and that's it. Nobody else will see these cryptids. Why do you think that is?
Well, I'm not sure anybody has the answers. Just like with the Mothman reports, I mean, that went on for quite a period of time. And I learned years later that apparently there was one or two similar Mothman-type events going on in the Pittsburgh area about the same time was going on down in West Virginia, but nobody ever knew about it. It was kept quiet. And, of course, you know, a couple of years ago up in Butler County, we had that sighting of that leathery winged creature was seen up in Butler County around East Brady, and apparently several different people saw that. But, you know, what's so odd is these things appear, again, they suddenly appear in an area for a short time, and then they're gone.
Right.
Sometimes they hang around for a little longer. Sometimes it's only one incident. Sometimes it's several incidents, and then it's gone. Just like the lizard man down in the Carolinas, you have periodic outbreaks of creature sightings. You know, you get an outbreak of a panther sighting or a lion sighting somewhere. You'll get a Thunderbird report. You'll get Bigfoot activity in certain areas. But then again, you know, as I was mentioning back in, for example, and it was here. I know this of other cases as well. Country that I've learned over the years from other investigators, you may have a Bigfoot sighting, and then you begin to have other cryptids show up, such as Black Panther sightings in the same area. And I don't have any cases of this, but over the years I heard from other researchers that they would hear cases, for example, where there would be a Bigfoot sighting, but with the Bigfoot was a Black Panther. So it adds more and more to the mystery if these are real reports. There's something else happening. Several years ago, I was at an event, and I just heard talking to this guy, and he said, I'm going to tell you something happened to me a few years ago. I believe it was up in Cambria County. And he said, I never told this to anybody before, but he said, I'll tell you. And he said, do you ever have a case where Bigfoot is accompanied by something else? And I said, well, what do you mean? Because I had an idea, but I didn't want to put any words in his mouth. He said, he was riding along the road, and he sees this large, huge Bigfoot standing there. But he said there was another strange animal right with it. And I thought he said it was a big cat. But no, he said it looked like a big calf, but it had glowing eyes. And so you hear so many strange stories from people who are really reluctant to talk about these things and don't know anything about them, and they just throw another piece of the puzzle in that makes things even stranger.
Well, you know, that's like something else we were talking about earlier with recently, it's something that you've noticed, and I've been getting the same thing, that when a person, a witness, sees a Bigfoot, if the Bigfoot realizes the person looking at them, they act stunned about it.
Yeah, and it's not just with the Bigfoot. It's other crypto creatures as well. It's as though they have no idea that they can be seen, and when they realize that they're actually visible, they're stunned and they're shocked. You know, one of the cases like that was in a case that I looked into a few years ago, probably one of the most amazing, really weird creature cases that I looked into. And I'll tell you, until I had a chance to interview both of the parties involved separately, I was a little reluctant. But after talking to them and hearing their emotion, how reluctant they were to talk about it, it was an amazing case. It's a fairly long report. You may have heard about it. This was November of 2011 up in Troy, PA, which is up in Bradford County. Mm-hmm. But I have a report in front of me if you'd like me to read it.
Sure.
All right. Well, it's going to take a few minutes, but it's very, very fascinating. On April 11th, I received a call from the man who, along with his girlfriend, had this experience that occurred on November 20th outside of Troy in Bradford County. Fellow told me that what he saw scared the hell out of us, and I wasn't able to interview his girlfriend until April 26th. But anyhow, what happened was 11:05 that evening, they're driving down Mud Creek Road, traveling west on Highway 14 near Troy. As they continued down the dark road, their attention drawn to the left side of the roadway. The man who was the driver saw some movement and mentioned it to his friend. The woman initially thought that it was a naked man that was on the side of the road. The driver, the creep speed, swerved his truck in the middle of the road and directed the high beams of his headlights towards the subject. The driver stopped 30 to 40 feet away. They soon realized that this was not a person, but instead a creature that was crawling very low to the ground. As they watched, the creature moved into a squatting position with its back completely straight, somewhat like the stance of a kangaroo. The arms of the creature were held tightly to its body. What looked like long claws that resembled the talons of an eagle were easily visible. The claws were estimated to be 8 to 10 inches in length. One claw was shorter than the other three. The creature had a muscular body. The head of the beast appeared to be oversized and shaped like that of a wolf. At the end of its head were two pointed bat-like ears that looked to be 4 to 6 inches long. The entire creature, according to the man, was covered with dull, wrinkly, dark black skin. The man described seeing large canine-like teeth in its mouth. The eyes of the creature were about the size of a silver dollar and were shiny black. The man stated that even though he had his high beams directed at the creature, the eyes did not reflect at all. The man said he looked over the body during the 12-second encounter and for some reason thought that the creature should have wings, but none were apparent. In the squatted position, the creature seemed to be about 5 feet tall. At this point, the creature was in the left lane of the road and about 1 to 2 feet onto the pavement. As the couple watched in amazement, the creature began to stretch its body. The man said that at this point, the animal started to stand up on its back legs while also falling over onto the front feet. The driver said that in this position, the creature seemed to be 6 to 7 feet tall. The animal then fell over on all four legs. The witnesses observed that the front claws of the creature were now 2 feet across the center line of the highway, while the back feet remained 1 to 2 feet from the edge of the road. The creature then turns its head to the right and looks towards the vehicle. The driver told me that it looked directly at them with a horrific expression, like it was panicked. The fellow saw it take a deep breath. He had the feeling that the creature realized, seen and observed, and when it realized it was like it was caught doing something. Mm-hmm. Once it realized it was being observed, it leaned back slightly and then reached forward with its claws. The creature took one tremendous leap and cleared a 7-foot embankment and moved out of sight into the woods, into a wooded area. The man estimated the leap was 40 feet long. As it was in the process of leaping, it was perfectly straight and held its front claws forward. The legs, as it was leaping, were only slightly larger than broomsticks or about the size of a walking crane and were very long. Then just a second after the creature was gone from sight, something else odd occurred. A large bird, possibly an owl, suddenly rushed at the passenger side window, almost hitting the glass, then took off and did not return. It happened so fast you're not sure it was an owl or not. The witnesses indicated the creature appeared to be changing form. The driver said its shape was nothing like when it was squatted. The woman stated to me that that it shaped into a norm. He thought it was brown in color and looked like a wolf with a little backer. She asked when it was leaping to the woods, she thought it stood about 9 feet tall. The woman, while reluctant to say it, said, "I think it was a man changing into a werewolf." The man, after the experience, went on to the Internet to try to figure out what he saw and told me the closest thing he found was a creature that would be a gargoyle but with no wings. And the man said to me, "I will never forget what we saw that night." Just a very, very weird case.
Yeah, and you know this gargoyle description, and you talked about Butler. I mean, this has happened in Pennsylvania before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's weird. You know, that is a classic case. You know, and I'm kind of surprised not more people know about it, but it is. And there's not much else you can say about it. I mean, you know, I get reports of strange things. Not that strange, but I get reports of strange things. That's a classic. That really is.
And then another one while we're at it, and then another strange flying creature report. You know, and some people, you know, you see these huge flying creatures, and they're thought like this fella who saw this thing in March of 2012 up in Fayette County again, okay? To him, this huge flying creature looked like a dragon. So this happened March 18th up in an area where there's a lot of history of Bigfoot activity. He's walking his dog in the front yard around quarter 12 that night, and he looks upward after hearing a whooshing sound coming from overhead. Well, the whooshing or swooshing sound is very common in a lot of the low-level Thunderbird reports as well.
Mm-hmm.
So flying above him, about 55 feet above him, here he sees this thing that looks like a dragon. He said the thing passed over an automatic dusk to dawn light, and it was able to get a good look at this thing. The body is about 22 feet long, with a wingspan about 18 feet wide, that looked to be shiny with almost reflective body with no scales. The color was dark, possibly brown and red, similar to auburn brown. At the end tip of the wings, there appeared to be talon-like fingers, about 3 to 4 in number. The arms and the wing structure appeared muscular. The wings were very thick and not like skin. It appeared to be a rear fin on both sides of its body, and the creature displayed an arrowhead-shaped tail. The witness also saw what appeared to be 2 extended rear legs. The creature had a cone shape around the head, and it stopped flat on the base of the neck. The oddest physical feature what the witness described was the mouth and eyes were illuminated with a very ominous orange glow. As the creature flew off over a tree at the bottom of the yard and moved off in the distance, he heard a deep, throaty sound similar to the foghorn on a boat. Mm. And the observation lasted about 20 seconds.
Well, that orange glow, now, almost every, well, Mothman or some type of report or something flying or flying humanoid, they almost always have that orange glow or reddish glow at the eyes or the face. You always hear about that. That's consistent.
A lot of the standard stuff reports you don't get, but some of the encrypted creature reports, we still hear about glowing, self-luminescent glowing eyes. And, you know, in a lot of the cases I looked at, especially during the wave of the 70s, when in a lot of cases people reported luminous eyes, generally, you know, red or orange red or green. But these were cases where you didn't have, for example, you didn't have the moon, you didn't have lights nearby, you didn't have anything that would cause reflection. And that's why in some of these cases, they appear to be self-luminescent, so many of the witnesses.
Well, you know, I had a Mothman-like case down in Huntington, West Virginia, about 2 or 3 years ago, where this thing was flying parallel to the vehicle. And the woman said that the glowing from the face, the eyes, was almost like a headlight.
Yeah.
She could see this thing.
Yeah. I mean, some of these people describe extremely brilliant illumination from these eyes. I mean, I had one case years ago that 2 hunters saw a Bigfoot at close range while out hunting in Westmoreland County. And the odd thing was, when the creature would turn its head, they weren't that far away from it, watching it, it would change from a bright red to a bright green color. It would alternate between red and green, if I believe it's red and green, yeah.
Well, that can't be natural. I wouldn't think, anyway. Oh, my God. What are we dealing with?
I don't know, but you know, everybody can't be wrong.
But my question is, Stan, how many of these cases? I mean, these are rare individual cases. These aren't common where the eyes change from red to green, are they?
Not a bit.
So how can we say that it's a natural occurrence? Couldn't it be a misidentification in this particular case?
I would say not. These guys were experienced hunters. They were very close range. They got a really good detailed look at this thing. They were seeing it for a considerable period of time. They were frightened. They made an official report on it to a government agency. And after interviewing them and listening to the reports, I believe they saw what they saw. These are the kind of odd, very strange reports you very rarely hear about. But you can't ignore it because it's something you don't hear about that often. And that's the whole thing. A lot, you know, the more and more, sometimes the really, really strange reports that have a really, really strange but detailed information are the ones that really stick out that might be really important.
Right. I agree.
It's weird that there's only one case that you're aware of that talks about multiple changing eye color.
I've never heard of that before. I have never heard of that.
That's a rarity, yeah.
Yeah.
That's bizarre.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I, be honest with you, I can attest to the red eye thing because in 88 I had that encounter at Conewaga Creek. And there have been, I've received four or five other reports since that. But, I mean, this thing did have glowing eyes. This flying whatever it was, flying humanoid or whatever it was we saw. But the red eyes, that is true.
Yeah.
So
it's a very strange phenomenon indeed.
Absolutely.
Well, let's go ahead and take our last break of the evening and get that out of the way, and we'll come back and we'll finish our conversation tonight with Stan Gordon, longtime 4TN researcher into the strange and unusual. He has investigated for close to 55 years. It'll be 55 years this year, as a matter of fact, looking into the UFO phenomenon, Bigfoot, strange creatures, all sorts of unknown and unnatural phenomenon. And we'll be continuing to talk about it here on BTE Radio. Folks, we invite you to keep it right where it's at here on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and KPGZ LP 102.7 FM, The Hog, as more great alternative talk radio continues right after the break.
Where else would you spend your Sunday nights? Beyond the Edge Radio. We'll be right back. Listening to Beyond the Edge Radio.
Paranormal talk radio.
With an edge.
And welcome back to tonight's program. This is BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge Radio. We are live here on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and KPGZ LP 102.7 FM, The Hog. I'm Eric Altman, your host and producer of tonight's program. With me, as always, Lon Strickler from Phantoms and Monsters and Astral Perceptions. And joining us tonight, our special guest, Stan Gordon. We invite you to check out Stan's website, stangordon.info. You can pick up copies of his books on his website. And you can also go to amazon.com, where you can find his books, Really Mysterious Pennsylvania and Silent Invasion, the Pennsylvania UFO Bigfoot Casebook, along with his DVD, Kecksburg, The Untold Story. Stan, there's a couple of events coming up that you're going to be appearing at. Tell us about the events coming up and where we can see you, where you can get copies of your books, where you're going to be lecturing at. You got a whole bunch of stuff going on in the next couple of months.
Yeah, the best thing is that they go to my website and just keep checking under 2014 upcoming events. I'll keep adding more events on, but of the more immediate future, we have the Big Westmoreland Arts and Heritage Festival out in Twin Lakes, outside of Greensburg, July 3rd through the 6th. And on July the 4th, from 11 a.m. till noon, I'll be speaking on these topics at the Hillside Stage, and then I'll be on the Heritage Trail in the authors section for the rest of the weekend up at the festival, so stop by and say hello. And also, we have the Kecksburg UFO Festival coming up. Technically, it's 25th through the 27th, but it officially really begins on Saturday, the July 26th. And opens with the parade of talk. But anyhow, there's a lot of interesting events on all day. They have a lot of very unique events. And inside of the community hall there, there's going to be a big arts and crafts show and vendors and whatever. The Kecksburg VFD have their UFO gift shop there. But also, we'll have a display of a number of area UFO and Bigfoot researchers and organizations. Of course, I'll be there. Eric will be there with the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society. Brian and Terry Seach for the Center for Unexplained Events. Fritz Segula from West Virginia MUFON. John Ventry with Pennsylvania MUFON. The ALCO Psi Paranormal Research Group. And maybe others will be showing up as well. And then we have the UFO conference, UFO Bigfoot conference on Sunday afternoon, the 27th. It's free to the public from 1:30 to 5. I'll be starting off with an update of recent events, strange encounters in the area. Eric will be speaking about Westmoreland and Fayette County Bigfoot encounters. John Ventry on the case for UFOs. And Brian Seach will be speaking on strange cryptids of the Ohio River Valley. So it's going to be a fun day. The events are free all weekend long. They have a lot of good food, car cruise on Sunday. They have a kids' pedal power track pool at 3 p.m. And I forgot to mention, Saturday night, after an all-day of events, they'll have a fireworks display on Saturday night as well. So it's a lot of fun, and every year we're getting more and more people. And next year, God willing, we're all still around, is the 5th anniversary of the Kecksburg incident, and we expect that that will be a very big special UFO festival, a lot of special events going on.
Sounds like a very busy upcoming couple of weeks ahead for you, Stan.
Yeah, there's a lot of things coming up. I have things pretty much scheduled already to the end of the year and starting already for next year. So things are very busy, and there's a lot of interest in the subject, and people want to learn more. And as yourself, you know, every time I go out and give a lecture, everywhere I go, there's always people coming up telling me about experiences they had some 20, 30 years ago that they never reported. So you can imagine from the reports that we hear about, so can you imagine how many cases go on all the time that we never hear about? So it's just amazing what probably is going on out there.
That's true. Now, before we wrap up the show tonight, we've got about probably about 10 minutes left. Let's talk a little bit about, if we can, some of the cases that you've looked into, and this is where I kind of, I'm open-minded, and I've been following your work, and you've been a mentor of mine for 30-plus years. I've known you that long. But this is where I kind of get kind of in the gray area because, as you know, I'm more of a flesh-and-blood researcher. I've kind of follow that path. But as we've talked, and we've talked many, many, many times, there's kind of a strange aspect to it. And as we've talked at the beginning of the show, we've talked throughout the show, people kind of tend to tie UFOs into it, or sometimes as Lon is tied into it, maybe the interdimensional theory to it. What do you really think is going on, Stan? Do you think there's something that we're going to be able to eventually tie the Bigfoot phenomenon into? Is there one pathway that we're going to be able to follow down?
I think the Bigfoot mystery is much, much deeper and much stranger than many researchers and many people out there realize or want to know about. Had I not been out in the field doing the firsthand investigation, I would be very reluctant to accept these reports myself. But I've seen enough patterns, interviewed enough independent witnesses, seen the various evidence out in the field, that's led me to believe that there may possibly be, you know, we can't say for sure that there isn't some type of physical creature out there. But, you know, the one thing that I've said for many years now, and I think this is why even in recent years, more and more Bigfoot researchers are beginning to ask the same question I am and beginning to look at other possibilities for what the source of Bigfoot might be, is the lack of physical evidence. It doesn't make any sense. You know, from the Native Americans to the present time, there have been reported sightings of encounters with these hairy creatures in the woods of Pennsylvania, throughout the country, in many parts of the world, something very, very similar. By now, if this was some type of normal animal, it would be very, very likely that somebody would have found a body by now or came up with a dead one or have more physical evidence. I mean, how often are we out in the woods and we ever come across a skeleton of a bear? Hardly ever, but there's many of them in our zoos. It just doesn't make sense. And more researchers are being to question the same thing. And then, excuse me, reluctantly, no, that's not what I want to say. What I meant to say is back in 73 and 74, we had these very strange cases occur, things that we weren't out there looking for, but they were being reported to the authorities, and then we were investigating. And among the very strange incidents that were coming to our attention would be our teams would go out to some of these areas. And we, you got to remember now, back in these days when these things were going on, my team of investigators, myself, we were on site within minutes to hours of the cases. So these weren't incidents weeks or months later. We were on the scene soon after. So we saw the emotional response. We got all the details as they were breaking. We saw animal reactions. We found physical evidence at the scene. So we were putting all this data together. And, for example, in some cases, the teams would go out, and there would be trails of footprints would suddenly stop and disappear. But the ground conditions were good. There should have been more tracks. And then we had those really weird cases, like the woman back in February 74 that heard the commotion on her cabin porch deep in the mountains of Fayette County, thought it was a pack of wild dogs, loaded her shotgun or one chamber of a shotgun, opened up the door and went on the porch to see this huge hairy creature with its arms straight up over its head a few feet in front of her, and she fires right into it, and it disappears in a flash of light. And then her in-laws heard the gunshot 100 feet away, and her son-in-law grabs his pistol. He starts running up towards the cabin. He's surrounded by four or five, what he said were hairy people with eyes like coals of fire, starts shooting at them, runs into the cabin, and there's this glowing object hovering over the woods at the same time. So you had these really, really weird reports. And cases like that, which were well documented, and there was no reason for these people to make up the story. They had nothing to gain by it. Their names were never used. And these were not the only cases, because I am aware of cases from throughout the country and other countries of very similar reports going on. Something's going on out there, and more and more, a lot of the evidence is suggesting, as hard as it is for me to say it, that we may be dealing with something that's not a normal flesh and blood animal. The interdimensional theory that Lon talked about is something I brought up years and years ago, and I'm tending to go in that direction, because now as we're learning in science about parallel universes and black holes and these areas of science we're just beginning to learn about and study, it makes more sense of how this might become a reality. We just don't know enough about it yet.
Well, there you go. That's it in a nutshell. I mean, and that's what, like I was saying before, people got to be open-minded about this stuff. And, it's not cut and dry. Bigfoot is, it's a phenomenon, like you said, that I don't believe as well will be explained in the near future.
Well, to me, unfortunately, it's, hear me out here. Hear me out here.
I understand.
To me, and to Stan, and to you, Lon, and to all of us researchers who are out there conducting this, if we are conducting it the way we're conducting it, think about this. We are wasting our time. We really are. We're never going to solve this mystery. We're never going to get to the bottom of it. If these creatures are interdimensional or connected to the UFO phenomenon or have some kind of ability to disappear or reappear, we're simply wasting our time because we don't have the knowledge, we don't have the technology, we don't have the understanding how to prove that these animals are real. So I feel bad for Stan, because for 55 years, Stan has gone out there and tried to solve this mystery and tried to collect physical evidence. And yes, he's come back with some casts and some hair samples and possibly scat samples, some strange audio recordings, but that hasn't proven anything. I've done the same for, 17, 18 years going into the field. You've done the same, Lon, and many, many hundreds of other researchers have done the same, and we've come back with literally nothing. So we're all basically wasting our time going out there and trying to solve a mystery that we're not going to be able to solve, if, in fact, that is the case where these creatures are not of this natural terrestrial plane.
Well,
Go ahead, Lon.
Go ahead, Stan.
No, I was just going to say, I've been doing this for so long. I don't think I wasted my time, because we gathered a huge amount of data. We've learned and uncovered new things that people have never uncovered before. We're learning a lot of new details. It's a whole new frontier. I may not be around, but hopefully some of the younger people will continue, and they'll be open-minded, and they'll someday find what we've been looking for all these years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, the science may catch up to this phenomena one day.
Yep.
Who knows?
Well, I certainly hope so, because it is, I honestly feel that, we go out there and we do the same thing over and over again, and we come back with the same information. And sometimes, yes, we do get cases where we do get something different, like you mentioned about the eyes changing color, or some of these rare cases that pop up. And sometimes we do get bits and pieces of information that we may not have collected before, but we're basically spinning our wheels. And we have been spinning our wheels for decades. And it is, to a point, it is basically wasting our time, if you really think about it, because we're doing the same thing over and over again. And I do agree with you, Stan, that we are collecting some information, and it may be right on the cusp of discovering a whole new science and a whole new way of how things work, and maybe these animals are interdimensional, how they travel back and forth. But in our lifetime, we may never see that.
And that's true, and we may not. Mm-hmm. But at least the data that we've collected and the information we got may lead others down the future to follow through. And, in fact, you know, Lon, we were going to talk about this a little, but I know you're aware of cases because of your own incident, which soon after that happened, there appeared to be a quick government response.
Yep.
I've had incidents I've worked on which appeared to have had a government interest in some of the cases I was working on. I mean, my feeling is that the government, the military, is very interested in both the UFO and the Bigfoot phenomena. And my gut feeling is that they're interested in Bigfoot and UFOs because they realize that there's some common association there. And I've got the feeling that they're very interested in the interdimensional theories.
Yeah, I agree with you. I really do. I really do agree with you. I mean, I think there is a connection. I think they've been well aware of this phenomena and what it very, very well may be for a long time now. There's a lot of anecdotal evidence to support that. So, you know, I'm encouraged, to be honest with you. I think the more we look into it, the better we are, and that we very well may get an answer to it someday.
Right, and, you know, as I mentioned in my Solid Invasion book, in the end I said, you know, we're just not there scientifically yet. We may not have the technology at this point to detect it. But just like with night vision equipment, the infrared detects heat. Well, you know, if you have the right equipment, you can see things that are right around you that we can't see with our eyes. Animals might be able to detect it, but someday we may have the technology that's going to be able to give us a lot more data about the phenomena we're dealing with today.
There you go.
Time will tell, I guess.
We'll see.
Time will
tell.
That's
why we do what we do.
Exactly.
Well, we've come to the top of the hour. It's 9:55 here on the East Coast, and we want to thank you, Stan, for stopping by and sharing your strange and unusual encounters with us and stories. And it's always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend. Look forward to seeing you at the Kecksburg Festival coming up at the end of the month. And, of course, I'm going to see you at the Westmoreland County Arts and Heritage Festival in this coming weekend. I'm going to be out there on the 4th of July to hear your lecture and your presentation. And give us your website again and how people can pick up copies of your book.
Okay, they can go to the website, which is stangordon.info, I-N-F-O, and we keep getting updated as often as we have a chance. And they can keep checking that for upcoming events as well under 2014 update, upcoming events. Books are available at Amazon.com, or they can get signed copies from our website at stangordon.info. Email is paufo@comcast.net. And they can always reach me by phone or through my website as well.
Very good. The one and only Stan Gordon stopping by to visit us tonight on the program, folks. StanGordon.info is the website. Stan, always a pleasure. Thanks for dropping by and spending your Sunday evening with us.
Oh, it was a great evening, guys. Thanks for having me back on.
Always a pleasure, and you're always welcome. And we'll be talking with you real soon.
Thanks. Talk to you again soon.
Okay, take care. Have a good night.
Mm-hmm. Good night.
All right, that wraps up another great show here tonight, Lon, with our guest Stan Gordon, talking about all kinds of strange anomalies and strange creature sightings.
Oh yeah, it's always a thrill to talk to Stan. I mean, I learn something every time he comes on the show, and you know, a lot of what he says makes a lot of sense. So, yeah, you know, I stay encouraged with you know, the phenomena. I think we're gonna find something out. It might not be real soon, but I think we're going to eventually find out something. And, you know, I can understand people that are in the field all the time, like yourself, may get discouraged to a point. But, you know, you never know what you're going to find, and maybe one day you'll be the guy that finds it.
Well, I don't know about that, but I still keep going out there. You know, even if these creatures are interdimensional or they do come from a UFO, it's not going to stop me from going out and looking. It's just it does get frustrating that if in fact they are interdimensional, the tools that we have and the knowledge that we have right now is not going to solve this mystery. We can still collect the data and we can still collect the information that may help future generations. Stan's absolutely right about that. But it's not going to help us, and you and I, or it's not going to help Stan, unfortunately, at this point. But hopefully down the road it'll help those who continue this legacy and continue to look into the phenomenon. It might help them to get further advanced along. So time will tell. We'll have to just wait and see what happens.
Maybe the great mystery will be solved one day.
Maybe one day. Well, again, special thanks to Stan for coming on the show tonight. It's always a great pleasure to talk to him. My longtime mentor and a very close friend of mine. I've known Stan since I was about 13 years old. So long, long time Stan and I have been good friends. And we share many of tales together, many investigations together, and we'll be getting together here this upcoming weekend at the Arts and Heritage Festival, and then again at the Kecksburg UFO and Old Fashioned Days Festival coming up at the end of July. To find out more information on those two events, you can go to Stan's website, stangordon.info, and check those out. Next week on the show, the ghost cop Stacy Jones will be dropping by to talk with us, her first time on the program. It's going to be a lot of fun to talk with Stacy, and she's got some really interesting stories to share with us. She's a police officer and a longtime police officer by trade, so it's going to be interesting how she puts her talents and her skills as a police officer, law enforcement officer, into use as a paranormal investigator.
Yep, I'm looking forward to it, and again, I want to thank the crew in the chat room tonight. A lot of interesting stuff going on, and to everybody that listened to us live.
Most definitely. And again, we want to thank you for putting up with our new format. It's something that unfortunately we have to do with the new radio station, 102.7 FM, The Hog. And hopefully we're going to see how it works out. And if it works out, we'll be sticking with it. If it doesn't, we'll be going back to our old format. So we'll see how things work out. So thank you for your patience tonight. It's a whole new process for us, too. Big learning curve for us. So, but our next host is not in tonight. Jose's not here with Revenant Radio, so we'll be turning things back over to the on-demand portion of Para X Radio Network, and we're going to call things a night. Lon, anything before we hit the road?
Nope. Talk to everybody next week.
All right. Thanks for tuning in tonight, folks, and we'll catch you again next Sunday night, 8 p.m. start time here on the Para X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and KPGZ LP 102.7 FM, The Hog. Good evening, everybody.
Join us for another live edition of Beyond the Edge Radio, Sunday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the Para X Radio Network. Archive shows are available on Podomatic, Parapods, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, the Para X Radio Network, or our official website, beyondtheedgeradio.com. To contact Eric, Juan, or Sean, email us at beyondtheedgeradio@gmail.com. Beyond the Edge Radio is a Beyond the Edge Entertainment production heard here on the Para X Radio Network.